kind enough to be joined by Jeffrey Flanagan, Royals.com, MLB.com, the finest Royals reporter in all of the land. I believe he's at the Mandalay Bay Casino because that's where the winter meetings is. Unless he chose another casino to stay at, Flanny, which one you at?
No, I'm at the Mandalay. It's huge and it's spacious and it takes forever to get from your room down to the lobby and down to the work rooms and all that stuff. But that's the way the winter meetings are. Nationals like that too. Orlando was like that. It's all sprawled out, spread out, but. A lot of stuff going on, a lot of people here.
Why was Brett Phillips at Intentional Talk dancing?
I have no idea. I've been trying to find him. I'm going to text him and say, what the heck? I did not see that. Did you play the video? Was it legit? Was it really him?
I watched it, and I was like, first of all, what is – I mean, I understand players show up to the winter meetings and stuff, but I was like, why is Brett Phillips at the winter meetings unless he just happens to, like, be in Vegas?
I have no idea. He lives in Tampa or St. Pete.
Yeah.
And why would he be here? That was my first question too. And I couldn't really make out his face, and just a little bit of a clip I saw. So was it an imposter? Was it him?
I think it was him. Because even the Royals tweeted it out. So I mean, if it wasn't him, I mean, why would the Royals do it? But
that's true.
That leads to my next question, because we have a crowded outfield, Flanny, as we've talked about before. I think a crowded rotation. And a crowded outfield, and Brett Phillips obviously part of that equation. Brian Goodwin part of that equation. Alex Gordon part of that equation. Jorge Soler, unless they decide DH with him. And now they got Billy Hamilton to be a Royal. Let me put it this way. This guy has finished second stolen bases every year since 2014. And he's been like one off of D. Gordon, like twice. Like just one off, or he would have been the stolen base champion. You had in Whit Merrifield that led Major League Baseball, Adalberto Mondesi, fourth in the AL in only 75 games. They can bring back the Tim Rock Raines, Ricky Henderson style of baseball with multiple people.
Yeah, I mean, what are the odds that those guys finish 1, 2, and 3 in the stolen base lead this year? I think they're pretty good. And I haven't talked to Ned about this yet, but I would imagine Hamilton will probably hit ninth, where he did a lot with the Reds, and you'd have a pretty dynamic 9-1-2 part of the batting order with all that speed. It'd be fun for Ned to play with that. Of course, the big question with Billy, he's a tremendous defender, and that's first and foremost in the Royals' mind. But can he get on base? I think last year was at 299 on base, which those are esky numbers, and that just doesn't cut it.
Yeah.
So. They've got to figure out a way for him to maybe draw more walks, punch the ball through the infield, just get on base somehow.
Yeah, that'll be a challenge for that. But, the Royals, will they have a little bit of power? I think so. Wherever O'Hearn fits in, we don't know about Schwindel yet. Salvador Perez, to me, will be a 30-home run guy. If he stays healthy, he'll lead this team in home runs with over 30. So that's some of your power there. I wouldn't be shocked if Adalberto Mondesi hit 30 home runs either, Flanagan.
I agree. I mean, we have not even seen the tip of the iceberg of what that kid can do. And with a full season, again, if he stays healthy, too, he was healthy last year. If he stays healthy, you throw out these numbers, and they sound crazy, but he could steal 60, 70 bases. He could, like you mentioned, he could hit 25, 30 home runs. I think he can be a 300 hitter, and obviously good enough to maybe win a gold glove. I mean, he can do it all.
Yeah. Yeah, and a guy that can put anywhere in the lineup, to be honest with you. Honestly, this guy can lead off or hit cleanup, Flanny. I mean, that's just the kind of talent he got. I mean, they finally materialized it with him. So I'm kind of excited with the rotation and everything. You put a story out yesterday as well. Whit Merrifield, obviously, with his contract, team control, you lead Major League Baseball in hits and stolen bases, something that hasn't been done since the Second World War. That's impressive, and he's a guy that's a workhorse that teams like. But the Royals probably could garner something for him, but it doesn't sound like the Royals want to bring up Nicky Lopez, not in a hurry to bring him up. We thought maybe Nicky Lopez would be in the equation, but it doesn't seem like that will happen. So is Whit, more or less, will he be here, do you think, the whole year? Do you think a trade deadline deal, or do you think they move on the following year from him when they bring up some of this younger talent, or they resign to keeping Whit?
I think they're pretty resigned to keeping him for a couple reasons. I mean, you mentioned club control for 4 years, and I've mentioned this 100 times. People are sick of hearing, but the same reason he's attractive to other teams, the same reason he's attractive to the Royals, is that club control. And he's a guy who's emerging as a leader in the clubhouse too. I mean, a lot of the younger players look up to him. He's we've not seen completely what Witt can do offensively either, because, I mean, he, you know, like you mentioned, he led the majors in hits and stolen bases, and I don't think he's going to, you know, regress offensively. So there's really no reason to move him, and Nicky Lopez does not have to go on the 40-man until next fall. You know, that's why force the issue. You need that roster space right now anyway. You know, things can change at the trade deadline. Who knows? But the other thing Dayton mentioned to me yesterday was, you know, say you deal him and you get more prospects. Well, they've got, in their minds, they have enough prospects, and they got other ways to get prospects through the draft, through the international signings, the Rule 5 draft here in a couple days. Those are going to be their outlets to add more prospects. They don't really feel like they need to trade. If they're going to trade someone, they want major league ready players, and I just don't think that's going to happen.
Flanny, you keep busy at the winter meetings. What's the hot story out there, Bryce Harper?
Him and Machado. I'm glad I'm not chasing that, because that would just wear you out. You know, I was talking to some of the other beat writers about those two guys, and they all agree that just sign somewhere, anywhere. I don't care. Just sign, you know, because it just grates on you. You're just watching your phone for notifications and or phone calls, and that's all you do here, and it's like 18 hours of that, and you're afraid to go to sleep at night because something might break at midnight. It's like, you know, get it over with. We were lucky, Billy Hamilton deal, and I mentioned it, that there was interest last week, and boom, 7 o'clock, you know, West Coast time, Monday morning, it's, you know, an agreement's in hand, so got lucky there.
Correct me if I'm wrong, didn't he make some ridiculous play in Kansas City? Didn't Hamilton make some ridiculous play in the outfield in Kansas City? Because I could have sworn Votto was talking about him after the game, like, that's an athlete. People don't think we're athletes, and we're athletes. I think he was talking about Billy Hamilton. Did he make some crazy play?
It probably was a 5-star play, yeah. I don't remember it offhand, but I vaguely remember what you're talking about. I don't remember the specific play, but, yeah, he led the league in outs where he had to go back, which means he plays a pretty shallow center field, and he's got the speed, obviously, to go chase a ball of the warning track and make it look easy. You know, I mean, he was fifth in outs above average overall, and outs going backward, he led the league. So, I mean, he's just an amazing, amazing defender.
Jeff Flanagan from the winter meetings in Las Vegas, Nevada. When you coming back, Flanny, Thursday?
Thursday, the Rule 5 draft's at 9 o'clock West Coast time here, and the Royals will be active in that. You know, they're the number two pick, so I expect them to get at least one, maybe two guys there. And then I think my flight's at 4 in the afternoon. So,
when'd you get there? Like last Monday?
No, I got in Sunday afternoon. Like most people get there. The days are so long, it seems like you've been here a week when it's only been a couple days. So.
Jeff Flanagan, Royals.com, MLB.com, Flanny. It's great stuff. Thanks, Jeff.
Okay, Bank. You take care.
Jeff Flanagan from Las Vegas. What do you think of Dust, man? Do you like the Royals style here? I mean, Billy Hamilton is a freak. This team is going to be good defensively. They are going to steal bases. Would they finish sixth in Major League Baseball in stolen base? They led the American League after the All-Star break once Mondy just took off. Mondy finished fourth in the American League in stolen bases in 75 games. Witt led it. And Billy Hamilton's finished second every year since 2014. I don't mean, obviously they need pitching. They're talking about the Rule 5 draft. They got Brad Keller last year in Rule 5. I have a feeling this team, the way they finished, they were 41 games under at the All-Star break, 5 games under after the All-Star break. Thank you very much. I think this team's going to be a little bit fun to watch, Dusty.
Yeah, I just feel like they're going to be like that team that's just without trying to be cliche. They're going to be like the scrappy. That's just what they're building their team around. If they have a bunch of young talent that they don't quite know what their mold's going to be, you have Mondesi, who you believe is your future star. You have a pitching rotation that really doesn't have the truth come about it yet. Brad Keller, it's been 1 year. Jake Junis has done the whole, like, I had a good year. Videotape got out about me. I kind of got discovered. Now I got to figure it out. Danny Duffy coming off another injury. So that pitching staff is a little weird. You got Ian Kennedy as well in that mix. And then with the lineup, you have guys like Brett Phillips, guys like Billy Hamilton, guys like Whit Merrifield, Alex Gordon finishing up his contract. And I think what Dayton Moore wants to do is, I think he just wants to play how he played the last month and a half of the season. Hopefully Billy Hamilton's a hit, and then maybe you can go get somebody in your farm system that you think you can deal, you know, Billy Hamilton for that you can keep building that farm system? Because as we know, they got completely depleted when they went for their World Series run, and they actually won the World Series. Now they've had to rebuild it, or as to steal one from Drake, you start from the bottom and now you're here. You got to come back with more talent. You got to fix the voids that you had that were vacated and now are no longer vacated because you need someone to fill that spot. And, you know, you look at bullpen arms, that's another discussion. But it looks like right now they're going to try to go to the old school style of slash and dash.
Billy Hamilton's got to get better. 299 on base percentage, only 68 OPS plus, so that's got to improve for him. From the Protein House, Eat with a Purpose text line, been challenged here. It says, you're out of your mind, Bink. I like Mondy, but he ain't doing any of that S next year. Really? Like, Mondy, I'm telling you, I mean, I was there day in and day out, and I heard what Ned Yost would say about him. He's finally going to the training room. For some reason, baseball players had this aversion that you look weak if you go to the training room. This guy has gotten a lot more muscular. He's gotten a lot more big, a lot bigger. And Ned Yost, towards the end of the season, kept him in every game. He hit 276, 14 home runs, hit 9 as a left-handed batter, 5 as a right-handed batter. Matter of fact, his home run distance was further than any other Royal. Like, he averaged more distance. And he wasn't just hitting, you know, 400 or 395. No, he was hitting 437, 427. He was launching them. But think about this. His stolen bases last year, he had 32. He played 75 games. Let's say he just plays 150 games. You double that 32 and it's at 64. You double his home runs, he's at 28 home runs and 64 stolen bases. I asked Ned Yost how many bases Mondy could steal, and he thought 60 to 70. Even Witt conceded that, I don't know if I'm going to win the stolen base title anymore because of Mondy. Mondy steals every time he's on base. It's effortless. How fast he is from home to first, I think it was the fastest in the league. Terrence Gore ran from first to second. Everybody's like, oh, my God, look at his speed from first to second. Mondy did that like twice this year. Mondy is the only one to steal on Corey Kluber. This guy's a different player. Whatever preconceived notion you had about Adalberto Mondesi before, it is different now, man. This kid is special. This guy could be a gold glover. Hitting 28 home runs or more is not impossible for Mondy. He crushes them from both sides of the plate. He's got unbelievable power. He's got unbelievable speed. He's the best athlete on the team. He's 23 years old. He is the Patrick Mahomes of the Kansas City Royals, albeit a lot less because he's not an MVP candidate. But you know what I'm saying. They're a young team. Brad Keller, young. Adalberto Mondesi, young. Whit Merrifield's not young. But Mondy is a different player. And I know a lot of people kind of tuned out the Royals towards the end of the year, but this kid did something almost every night. Whether it's on the base path, the power at the home run, he did a lot of stuff. And to think that Mondy, who finished fourth in the American League in stolen bases in 75 games, think about that. It was unbelievable what this kid did. He was fun to watch, and he's going to be fun to watch this year. Power, speed, five tools, it's finally coming together. Yes, he makes his debut in the 2015 World Series, and we had to sit around and wait. But he's 23. Think about how young he is. Think about how long it took Whit Merrifield to develop. Whit Merrifield's the same age as Madison Bumgarner. It took him a long time to develop. It didn't take Mondy that long. He's 23, turns 24 this July. But this kid is fun to watch. And I think he'll ever bit get 50 or 60 stolen bases next year. Don't even think it's a question. When you have 32 in 75 games, it's absolutely ridiculous. So I'm looking forward to next year. Chris Kleiman was hired as the head coach at Kansas State University. We talked to John Kurtz from K-Man Radio about the Kleiman hire and how good is it that he's still going to coach North Dakota State. Is that a concern because National Signing Day starts on the 19th of December? The first signing day, second one's on February 6th. So we talk all things Chris Kleiman next.
Bing at night.
Join us now from K-Man in Manhattan. John Kurtz has been my go-to guy for Kansas State Athletics. Follow him on Twitter at JL Kurtz. He's all over the Kansas State coaching search. And John, you and I have talked about this, which direction Kansas State's going to go. We've thrown out the candidates. Well, Kansas State made the decision. Chris Kleiman, North Dakota State. Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, there have been the thoughts that I have about it and the thoughts that fans have about it, which have been growing apart, I think. But I'll say this, the guy clearly can coach. I don't think anybody doubts his coaching acumen.
certainly his ability to coach on the defensive side of the football. That's where he comes from, is the defensive coordinator of North Dakota State, then two head coach, and he's been a part of all six of those national championships in the last 7 years. And, in fact, they started right when he came as a defensive coach. That was when North Dakota State took the big jump as a program under Craig Bohl. So that's the good, okay? And he has the respect of a lot of coaches across the country. He is on the board, or one of the chairmen, I forget exactly, of the American Football Coaches Association. So that's all football coaches in the country. David Shaw is, for instance, another coach that's there. This is a respected guy, and it's drawn praise nationally, not only from reporters, but from recruits, from current players on K-State's roster. That's all the good. The bad or the unknown here with this hire is that typically coaches at that level, at the FCS level, have to go through another step here, be it Power 5 coordinator or a group of five head coach, somebody like Neil Brown from Troy, who I believe was the other finalist here in this coaching search for K-State. And what kind of a staff can Chris Klieman put together to recruit at the Power 5 level? He's recruited incredibly well at North Dakota State relative to their peers. He has a lot of inherent advantages there. Imagine Alabama recruiting at the FCS level. That's what they have. But he has out-recruited some FBS programs for kids. He only has 1 year of coaching experience at the FBS level, though, in his entire career. So he is well-respected. I do believe he has more connections than it would appear on the surface. But I think what kind of a staff he can put together and, therefore, how well he'll be able to recruit will really tell the tale of what winds up happening in Manhattan.
And that's the thing right there. He wants to still coach North Dakota State from all I've heard. I know his press conference is tomorrow, but from what I've heard, he still wants to coach North Dakota State, which is a good thing. I mean, you want some loyalty with your coach to their program. They are in the semifinals, but the championship game is January 6th, and I would imagine North Dakota State would be in that. Now, the early signing period that is actually important, more guys sign on the first one, the second one, but December 19th, a very big day in college football. Does that concern anybody there?
Yeah, I do think it's a concern. It's a frustration of a lot of the fans. And basically what's happened here is I imagine we'll find out for sure officially on what the schedule is going to be, what the timeline will be at the press conference tomorrow for all of this. I've been told, though, that essentially around 8 of the next 10 days he'll be in Manhattan. So it's going to be a juggling act, I think, like what Scott Frost and his staff did last year at UCF before heading to Nebraska. He coached through the bowl game technically, but he was going back and forth in terms of what he was doing for each job. I think that's basically what's happened here. And a lot of this goes back to some North Dakota State history when Gene Taylor was the AD there and Craig Bohl, the initial architect of that dynasty at North Dakota State, he left to take the Wyoming job in the middle of a playoff run that rubbed people the wrong way. There were a lot of bridges burned on his way out of town with that. That's always sat with Gene Taylor. That's, I think, a big reason why Craig Bohl was never even remotely considered for this coaching job, and it was Klieman instead. So I always expected it to happen, but it's fair to criticize. K-State's recruiting class right now, somehow they've been able to land three commitments without a head coach, but stands at 11, and they need at least double that in terms of recruiting numbers just to fill out some numbers this year, and it's going to be tough to do. Also, an underrated part of this is re-recruiting the current roster. I think Skylar Thompson will come back. He seemed outwardly and publicly very happy about the hire of Chris Klieman, so that is good. Excuse me, but Alex Barnes, running back, is a huge part of this. K-State will have zero scholarship running backs returning next year if Alex Barnes opts to either go pro or be a grad transfer, which is what the rumor has been. I think that'll be a tough sell to get him to stay, but if he could, he would seem to be a good fit in an offense that this past year has essentially a 2.5-to-1 run-pass ratio. So those are the types of things that are concerning, and it's fair to point out, hey, Scott Frost went 4-8 his first year at Nebraska. I don't know how fair it is to point back to his decision to go split time upon immediately taking the job, but I'm absolutely welcoming legitimate criticism on that front. It'll be interesting to see what Gene Taylor has to say about it.
Here's the other thing, too. North Dakota State's been beating its share of big boys, too. You know, this is a team that beat Kansas State, held them to 21 points in 2013. Klieman was the defensive coordinator then, Craig Bohl the head coach, but he's beaten Iowa State, and he's beaten the University of Iowa when they were ranked, 13th in the country. You know, they're no strangers to beating better opponents.
Yeah, they're Sangarin rankings. So Sangarin does not just rankings of FBS teams. They put in FCS as well in one giant ranking, and I believe they were sixth in the Big 12, sixth or seventh in the Big 12 in Sagarin rankings. They're pretty high up there. I mean, this is a team, I really have no doubt in my mind, they would beat K-State from this past season if they played on a neutral field, certainly in the Fargo Dome, where North Dakota State has a big advantage there. It's a program that has been elevated recruiting-wise by Klieman even since when Bull had it initially up and running. Now, the thing there is, yes, he has proven he's able to beat big boys. He's been able to do it at North Dakota State. That's all with crazy recruiting advantages relative to his peers there. Resource-wise, they spend more money on recruiting at North Dakota State than anybody else at FCS. So that's the sort of thing that's helped elevate his program to that point. Can he still recruit at a decent level in the Big 12 when he's going up against Power 5 coaches and Power 5 peers? I mean, I think that's still the big question here, but you can't really question anything he's done at North Dakota State because you're right. They've been giant killers. That Iowa team they beat was a top 20 team when they won on the road. They walloped Iowa State, won that game by 3 touchdowns that you referred to there, and obviously beat K-State as well, and that was a decent 8-win K-State team in Manhattan.
And the one thing, too, is, and what I've heard is, because they do a lot of high school football around here, the coaches around here respect him and Chris Klieman, and I think that's important because, you know, we've seen Daniel Carson here locally, William Kirstman, Independence, go to Texas. We've seen Mario Goodrich go from Lee Summit West go to Clemson. We've seen Ronnie Bell, the Simone Trophy winner this past year, go to Michigan. Blue Valley North kid, just right here in Kansas City on the Kansas side, he's a running back. He chose Michigan. Jim Harbaugh came in and got him. Graham Mertz, the quarterback there, best quarterback in the state of Kansas, one of the best quarterbacks nationally, offered by places like Alabama, Ohio State, and Oregon. He's chose Wisconsin. So, you know, Kansas is limited as far as talent in high school. Now, they do have quite a bit of JUCO talent, but none of them staying. And this will be a battle between Les Miles and Klieman. You know, Les Miles can walk in with that ring from LSU, and Klieman can walk in with 3 or 4 rings from North Dakota State. But, you know, I'm interested in this dynamic between Klieman and Miles. We might see a good Sunflower Showdown once again.
No, I really am, too. It's a fascinating dynamic there. And I'll add this, too, as far as Klieman continuing to coach with North Dakota State right now. I do think a big advantage, at least in the short term, will be, hey, he's going to be on ESPN Friday night coaching and getting a lot of good publicity there. And if he is winning a national championship, I do think that can help recruiting in the short term as well, looking at your future head coach out there winning championships as he had and continuing that dynasty. I have heard the same, Jay, and I know you're probably more keyed into it than I am. The coaches in the Kansas City area, yeah, which is a place that he's recruited quite a bit at North Dakota State. I believe they have 5 Kansas City area kids on their roster right now.
Yeah, the running back from Lee Summit, that was really good, King. Yeah.
Yeah, he is very well respected among the Kansas City high school coaches from what I know. And you're right. You know, there's a lot of focus, and I certainly have questions. Will they be able to recruit Texas and Oklahoma, places like that, which is more traditionally where you think of trying to build your talent base if you are going to recruit in the Big 12? But I would not just brush aside. There were some that when I said on Twitter the other day, hey, he's respected in Kansas City, a lot of people brushed that aside. I'm with you. If you can start to lock down Kansas City and the Kansas City metro area extending into Lawrence, they've had some players too, including a current K-State commit, you can get a pretty good amount of talent there, and I do think that will be very important to see how well he's able to do there against Les Miles. I think there's going to be a lot more juice to the local schools now recruiting the Kansas City area than what there has been.
Yeah, there's been a lot of good players. I mentioned Mario Goodrich. He's getting some snaps for Clemson there in the playoffs. He's a true freshman. Ronnie Bell had a couple touchdowns this year for Michigan. True freshman, Park Hill High School in Kansas City. Daniel Carson down there. Graham Mertz is going to Wisconsin. I mean, A.J. Taylor led Wisconsin in receiving yards, Rockhurst High School. I mean, there is talent. Look at Evan Bames in the NFL. Braden Smith, Olathe South High School, plays for the Colts as well. 2 guys that are offensive linemen from the Kansas City area. Drew Locke is going to be one of the top quarterbacks draft this year from Kansas City. I mean, you know, it's fine if you go other places, but it's also good to lock down the local area as well. You get the local area, and then you get national. It's kind of like Gary Pinkle did at Missouri for so long. Shut down the borders in the state of Missouri, and then we'll go to Texas and everywhere else to get the players. But Klieman seems like a guy that just, you know, kind of really dominates the Midwest, and that's important. I mean, you take a section of the country and say, we're going to dominate this, and we'll sprinkle the others in. But, hey, that's a large section of the country with some tough football players.
Yeah, another thing that I'll be curious about is how much he sticks with recruiting the upper Midwest, because right now his roster is almost entirely comprised of not just North Dakota, but Wisconsin and Minnesota players, and they've been able to pick off some of those players that fall through the cracks of Big Ten schools there. I don't know what his goal would be still there, if he's going to try and recruit more of that Big Ten territory still, or if he goes and tries to find someone on his staff with big-time Texas connections and moves back to more of a Big 12 recruiting footprint. But they've had a lot of luck going after overlooked players that Nebraska didn't want, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and even some that have had offers in that regard. For instance, you know, this is a Kansas City area kid too, but this is the type of kid that they've been in on Jackson Neen, who's at Lawrence Free State, who is fringe Power 5. K-State had been interested in him before the coaching change, but he had a North Dakota State offer and had already been recruited by Kleiman in North Dakota State. A kid like that, just from the state of Wisconsin or Minnesota, that is where North Dakota State has really thrived. And I don't know. At this point, it'll depend on the staff, I'm sure, too, but I don't know what his strategy will be, if it'll change or if it'll stay essentially the same.
Well, as a K-State partner, you know, I hope we get Kleiman on. I don't know what the access is going to be like, even for you guys. I expect it to be a little bit different.
Can't be worse. I know that much.
It
can't be worse than what we've had. There is not much in terms of media access with Phil Snyder. That's one of those crazy things we've been talking about, those of us that cover the team on the beat. Hey, what is this going to be like? It's been such a routine with Bill Snyder. It never has changed. The entire time I've been covering the team, the entire time he's been the head coach, he does his press conference on Tuesday. You get some players, not necessarily who you actually request, and then that's it. It will be a lot of fun if all of a sudden we can go see some practices, talk to coordinators. That's always been a big sticking point, that you can't talk to the assistant coaches. So those types of things I'm very much looking forward to from a media perspective, and just from what I've been able to gauge of the guy so far, he seems much more willing to be able to do things like that. I listened to his radio show last night, where I thought he did very well in terms of just being upfront and honest about the situation and his job and his feelings on K-State and North Dakota State. He seemed very much willing to embrace doing the radio show, as opposed to it being a chore, which is what I think it has felt like to Bill Snyder in the past. So that change, I think, will be good for everybody involved.
Well, it comes up with December 14th, playing South Dakota State, championship game January 5th, I believe, for FCS on that level. John Kurtz, always enjoy talking to you. J-O at J-O Kurtz on Twitter, K-Man Radio Program Director there. Thanks a lot, John.
Anytime, Jay.
Anytime is right. Love talking to K-State to you, John Kurtz. Coming up next, there's an AFC West opponent. The Chiefs may be playing in a weird city next year against an opponent. I'll discuss what this team is doing next.
Bane at night.
The ultimate Christmas party tomorrow night, 610 Sports Radio. You're invited. 21-plus event presented by Twin Peaks. Location, Kansas Hall in Overland Park, from 6 to 10. Complimentary pizza buffet, 6 to 8. We're thanking our listeners and supporting them for a great year by throwing the holiday party, raising money for Noah's Bandage Project, and Noah's Bandage Project is giving away over 5,000 in prizes, including an arcade classic machine presented by Meanies. All 610 Sports Radio listeners will be invited. There will be a band with karaoke, and you'll get to see Brad Fanning sing. And hopefully he dresses like my elf, like he did last year. So I'm looking forward to the ultimate Christmas party tomorrow. The Oakland Raiders. This comes from Jason Cole, who covers the NFL, fansided.com. Has a tweet. He says, high-ranking Raiders officials said today there is no way, in quotes, the team plays in Oakland in the 2019 season, after the city filed suit today. Source said there are 5 or 6 cities the team will consider, including some that already have NFL teams. This spells disaster. You think the Raiders were a disaster this year, getting rid of Mack and Cooper? Which, by the way, you seen Cooper play lately? Wow. These are the cities. Just like I was telling Dustman, San Antonio. San Antonio's up there. They want someone in the Alamo Dome. Jerry Jones does not want another NFL team in the state of Texas, but I assume he would let them for a year. Portland, St. Louis, Seattle, and Phoenix. Much will depend on if the team has to move the whole operation or stays to train in Oakland and just flies for games. I can't imagine the Raiders training in Oakland and flying each week to St. Louis. I mean, Portland makes more sense. Seattle, no one's going to go to those games. No one's going to see the Raiders. Again, the Raiders aren't going to be relevant until Vegas. Again, they got three number one draft picks in the next 3 years, or in the next 2 years, because of some of the trades that they've made. But that's interesting. I knew this whole Oakland thing wasn't going to work out for them. I mean, once you say you're leaving, man. You got to just leave. That town owes you nothing. I can't imagine if Chiefs fans knew the Chiefs were leaving, what Arrowhead Stadium would look like. And I know Chiefs Kingdom's extremely loyal, but if they were leaving Kansas City, I can't imagine what the fans would be like. What do you think it's like going to a Raiders game now? When the team is in the tank, people are thinking they're tanking. And yet, you know they're leaving you. They know you. They spurned you for the second time. Why does Oakland even support the Raiders? The Raiders took their middle finger and put it right in their face. The city of Oakland, the football fans of Oakland, have supported that team. They took both middle fingers, stuck it right to their fans' face. And now they have to go find a place to play until the new stadium's done in Las Vegas. Insane stuff. By the way, the Kansas City Royals have some news as well. It's kind of making its rounds tonight. Speaking with the media at the winter meetings in Las Vegas, Yost said Tuesday he isn't viewing 2019 as his final season. It's interesting because Ned Yost is always year to year. Could Ned surprise us once again? And I'm not 100% sure Ned was coming back this year. But I'll tell you, I think the second half of the season rejuvenated him. I think he saw that influx of talent. I think he saw what O'Hearn was doing. I think he saw what Mondesi was doing. I think he saw what Brad Keller was doing. And he had fun. And I noticed it. Because I even asked Ned when I was doing the Royal stuff each night. And so it was me or somebody else asked him what he did at All-Star break. What was his attitude around All-Star break? He said he wasn't having fun. He went back to Georgia. He just wasn't having fun. The team was in the tank, 41 games under. Would you have fun managing that team as well? They were terrible. But they started to play better. And he was talking about, you know, driving to work and excited to be there. I know in the media it was more fun to go to Royals games when they were good than when they were getting bombed every night. It was frustrating to watch. It was extremely frustrating to watch, but it became fun. And Royals baseball became fun again. Will Ned Yost manage again or not for another year? I don't know. Mike Matheny was hired basically in the same role Ned Yost was hired in before Ned Yost took over manager. Which I do think when we look around, Mike Matheny might end up being the Royals' next manager. But I doubt he'd want to stay in the organization for a couple years to do it. Ned would have to make his decision probably quicker, sooner rather than later. Ned Yost likes to hunt. He loves the farm. He's got his ring. I mean, he took one for the team last year because he knew he was going to rack up losses. He knew his baseball reference page was picking up some L's next year. He even made a quote today. I started because he was a card reference because he's in Vegas. I knew I had fives last year. He knew they were going to be bad. John Gibbons didn't want to see a rebuild in Toronto. Ned Yost, say what you want about him, but he was willing to take one for the team and take losses because he knew he was going to build up losses this year. He's seen it done before. But again, this team's probably a couple years away from competing because it's going to take, you know, Jackson Coar and Brady Singer and Sully Matias and MJ Melendez and all these guys to matriculate through the season, the system. Khalil Lee will have to be, you know, probably in Omaha next year. Nicky Lopez not ready to come up this year, another year in Omaha. Can't be put onto the 40-man next year. So it'll be interesting to see as the winter meetings going on. We come back, I'll give you an update on Tyreek Hill and Melvin Gordon for Thursday night's game. Will they play or not? It's a good question. They could both play. Talk about that next.
Been at night.
Eric Williams, who writes for the Chargers for ESPN, says Chiefs head coach Andy Reid said that wide receiver Tyreek Hill is moving around all right and should be okay to play on Thursday night against the Chargers. Dusty, you've been watching Tyreek Hill film from practice. I've watched a little few videos myself. Still wrapped up a little bit. But there is no way in primetime with everybody watching primetime. Tyreek Hill, the cheetah. There's no way the cheetah doesn't play.
No way. Yeah, I think he's all in. I'm also biased on this video because, as we discussed last night, I had to win in fantasy football.
Which you did.
I did, man.
I told you.
I did.
I told you there's nothing to worry about. I told you don't worry about jinxes. I knocked on wood for you.
Many times.
Real wood.
Yeah, real wood. So in the championship game, winner gets 900 bones. And if I ever run into Goatman, I owe him a beer, apparently. So there's that. But, I mean, also Tyreek Hill's on my fantasy squad. And
oh, man.
Yeah. I'm not worried, though.
I don't like Thursday night players. Do you?
I do.
I don't.
I've got Christian McCaffrey, and I've also got Juju Smith-Schuster, as well as Antonio Brown. I got those during trades. Or Brown I got during a trade. I didn't get all these in a draft. So
you're a hell of a GM there, Dustman.
I had a good draft. My first four picks this year were Kamara, Christian McCaffrey, Tyreek Hill, and Juju. I drafted James Conner, 151st overall.
Smart.
And I drafted James White. I then traded James White to a guy who had Le'Veon Bell, thinking that maybe there was a chance. Le'Veon Bell obviously didn't turn out to be anything. And then also James White, if you've looked at his numbers recently, his percentage of snaps have gone down drastically. In fact, he was only in 48% of snaps in his last game. I'm not trying to get all fanballs fantasy Sunday that you can hear Steven Serta do, but also I traded for Antonio Brown. I traded James Conner and Russell Wilson. James Conner got hurt, missed first round of playoffs. Doesn't affect me. Although Antonio Brown had his worst game of probably his career last Sunday, but I snuck by, and Thursday night I did at one point. I had Christian McCaffrey and Juju Smith-Schuster, who on the first drive for Carolina in that Thursday night game, Christian McCaffrey racked up 14 points, and on the very next play, Pittsburgh got the ball after Carolina scored. Juju took it 80 for the house for a touchdown.
How close did it get? Did you start Juju when he had a 99-yarder?
Yes. I start him every week. He's my flex.
I wanted Juju instead of Tano, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm still pissed about that. Can you imagine Tyreek Hill and Juju?
Yeah, and a healthy Watkins and Travis Kelce. Yeah.
I mean, I don't think Watkins would be here if you had Juju.
That's true. Probably not. So, yeah, you'd have Juju, Kelce, Tyreek, and then you have the other guys like Conley and Robinson as well.
How close did he get when Dalvin Cook got a garbage time TD?
The final score was 140.9 was what my score was. Theirs was like 127. So I had a 13-point cushion after he scored. But either way.
Fire their offensive coordinator, too.
Yeah, because, I mean, I think at the end of the first half, Kirk Cousins was like 4 of 6 for 26 yards. Terrible.
You like that? You like that?
Yeah, and I wish people would like – NFL is so, like, react immediately to it. Like, you've seen it with the MVP race this year. Like, Drew Brees has a really good game, and everybody says Drew Brees is the MVP. The Rams beat the Chiefs and score 54, and the Rams are the best team in the NFL. Then the Saints lose to the Cowboys, and there's, like, you know, all this other stuff. And I get it. The sample size of the NBA or the NFL is very much smaller than a lot of the other major sports. But, I mean, yeah. I think Tyreek Hill's fine. I think that he's going to play in this game. I think that he's a primetime player. I know that you could dissect all his primetime games. You could just go back to everything that Tyreek Hill's done great, and it's been there. I will say this. I would like to not see him on punt returns. I would like them to not have him on punt returns. I know that sounds maybe a bit under the weather on my part as being somebody that evaluates these games, but, I mean, why?
They don't kick to him anyway.
They don't kick to him, and if they don't kick to him and they put somebody in there that could possibly run punts back, you know, maybe.
In the postseason, I'm wanting to because that changes the game.
Right, but that'll also give him time. I mean, if you win Thursday night, you will win the AFC West, and then if Pittsburgh can somehow beat New England at Pittsburgh on Sunday, you would lock the number one seed up as well. Then the Chiefs necessarily don't have to play for 3 weeks.
It is nice. It's who was I listening to? I think it was Anthony Lynn that was asked the question for the Chargers. Is it nice? He was asked, is it nice to have extra days rest? You know, because they get those 3 extra days because you're playing Thursday night. But he's like, it's a catch-22 because you got to play a short week, you know, against a good opponent, but yet you get some extra days rest too, which is nice because the Chiefs will have 3 extra days to prepare for the Seahawks. That's going to be a great Sunday night game.
Yeah, I mean, like...
I mean, it's back-to-back primetime for the Chiefs. It's ratings bonanza for this team.
And, I mean, get used to that because...
Oh, next year they're going to be loaded.
I mean, I'm going to... I guess I can tease my show tomorrow night that you'll be Santa Claus on. I'm going to talk about that. I mean, you look at what Steph Curry did in the NBA. You're getting ready to see that with Patrick Mahomes in the NFL. What Steph Curry did in the NBA, and I know not everybody in the city likes the NBA, but just calm down, damn it. What Steph Curry did in the NBA was crazy, because you would look at the sports lines, and I know you don't follow the NBA maybe as much as some of us around here do, but I mean, not a lot of people do, Jay, but like, you would probably look at the score lines and be like, holy cow.
I follow the NHL.
You know, like 4 years, yeah, like I don't know anything. I digress. I don't know as much about the NHL that I know about the NBA. And I know that there are people like yourself that would probably look at a score line to the bottom of the screen down a running ticker, and you'd say, Steph Curry had how many points and he had how many threes last night?
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's an anomaly. And then you see it again, and then you see it again, and then you see what he did in the NBA. He won the MVP unanimously. And LeBron's never done that. Jordan never won it unanimously. Steph Curry won the NBA MVP unanimously because of the way he played the game and the way that he, like, and the way he did it. Mahomes is the same way. It's not three-pointers, but it's deep heaves, it's no-look passes, and it's things that only he can do that eventually people will start to try and mock and mimic, and they may not do it as well, but you look at the NBA now, everybody's trying to shoot threes, they're trying to run the outsides. Eventually, everybody's going to try to run this spread pass and just crazy offense the Chiefs are doing, or they're going to try to do that type of thing, and you're going to start seeing people in Carolina, Florida, Texas, Chicago wearing a Patrick Mahomes jersey when he plays in Kansas City, like you see average people around the neighborhoods in this area wearing Steph Curry basketball jerseys, because he's fun to watch, he's changed the game, and he's bringing people with him. And guess where it's going to be put on? National television.
And I've always said he's making Kansas City relevant, like Green Bay is relevant, the smallest market in professional sports because of Aaron Rodgers. They're always talked about because of Aaron.
And they were,
and the Colts always talked about because of Manning. Well, Kansas City, a smaller city, will always be talked about.
Right.
James Jones, the former wide receiver for Green Bay and Oakland from NFL Network, I asked him a simple question. He joined us earlier today. Is Mahomes the MVP?
Absolutely no question about it. And if anybody debates it, they're crazy and they're out of their mind. I've seen this guy in person. And beyond all the throws he made, just the composure that he has. I mean, this was one of those games where you're like, okay, the young quarterback is going to show up. We know all his stats. He's been having a great year. But now he has to really go down there against a big-time defense, and he has to score a touchdown to keep his team in the game. And he drives all the way down the field, fourth down and two, gets it out to his running back, touchdown, big-time drive, and then gets the ball back again and does the same thing. He's the MVP in my book.
Text line is asking us about Kelvin Benjamin. And I will address it. Protein House, Eat with the Purpose text line. What do you think Kelvin will do? Then it was Kelvin from the same text line. I'm not expecting much. A handful of plays. Maybe he gets a catch, target. I mean, I mean, he is in game shape. He has been playing this year.
Yeah, expect him inside when it's like a third and two or like a goal line where it's inside the five, but nothing else.
Do you know how difficult Andy Reid's playbook is?
I mean, look at the ACT.
I mean... Andy Reid's got a sophisticated playbook, and ask somebody to come in and learn it that easy.
On a short week.
Yeah, it's not the easiest thing to do. So I don't know. I think you'll see him. I don't know in what kind of role, but I wouldn't be surprised if you see him inactive again this week. Those 3 extra days for Seattle, could he play then or not? Huge thanks to James Jones joining us. Matt Lane joined us in studio from ArrowheadPride.com. John Kurtz and Jeff Flanagan. Huge thanks to Dusty Likens producing the operation. Dusty fills in tomorrow night while I play Bad Santa. See you guys Friday night. Good night.